Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff. I'm Scott McNally. Of course, I'm here with Dave Crossland. Our programming is brought to you by GetAzov.com and TrueNutrition.com. We have links for that stuff down in the description. We've got drugs in the news today. We have a couple stories that we're going to try to get to, including one that says that, people who use over-the-counter supplements are more likely to use steroids. There was that, and then there was a huge package discovered in Philadelphia destined for, like, my neighborhood, basically, containing all sorts of GH and...
Scott's package.
Was not me. Was not me. We're gonna possibly get to that if we have time, but in 20 minutes from now, Dr. Scott is going to join us, and we are going to discuss the benefits of injectable L-carnitine. So let's, as you would say, Dave, let's get cracking. Is that a crack on?
Let's get on with the show.
Okay, I think we say that here in the U.S. too.
I know. I'm going to try to speak American today.
Very good, chap. Our first story, Dave.
Howdy, dude.
It's telling us that, let's see if I can bring this up here on my other computer. It's telling us that the use of legal performance-enhancing substances increase the risk of future anabolic steroid use. One, young men who use legal performance-enhancing substances were more likely to engage in future anabolic androgenic steroid use compared to non-users of legal performance-enhancing substances among young males. It was associated with a threefold increase or risk of future anabolic steroid use. So they also mentioned that females were not a part of this at all. Chicks didn't give a F.
I mean, on the surface of it, you turn around and stuff, this go, oh, what a load of bollocks, it's fucking bullshit, none of that shit happens. But actually, when you start and look at it and you start to think about it, it actually... I mean, it's the gateway drug scenario, but it's not that people are going to consider steroids because they're using protein powders.
Yeah.
When you look at a supplement market, you have creatine. Well, you start really with vitamins and minerals. So you have, you know, the very introduction to supplementation would be vitamins and minerals, trying to replace things that your diet may not provide.
Sure.
Then you start moving into performance improvers. So stuff like creatine, stuff like pre-workouts, stimulants, things that will give you an edge and help you perform better.
Yeah.
Shortly after that, you start edging on stuff like Norotin 2, pro-hormones,
yes.
SARMs. Now, over here, a lot of supplement companies, particularly online ones, sell SARMs. Now, SARMs are not legal for sale. And what they do is they put, this is a research drug, it's not for human consumption, and think that that gets them out of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It is very badly policed currently, but it is an area that they've actually formed a whole new regulatory body to, it's not only SARMs they're looking into, but to cover the policing of SARMs. And it's called the, Food Crime Unit, National Food Crime Unit.
Those guys sound scary, the Food Crime Unit.
Well, at the moment, they're a bit of a toothless tiger. They rely on other partner organizations to do enforcement. They don't have any legislation supporting them themselves. But there were moves towards legislation just before the COVID lockdown thing, so I wouldn't surprise me if that's not picked up again.
The FCU.
NFCU, National Food Crime Unit. And one of the things that they particularly have a hot potato about is DMP and
sure.
SARMs.
Okay.
So, but at the moment, you know, you go on your supplement online and you buy your protein.
Yeah.
And you get frustrated. You want a bit more. So you buy a pre-workout and you get a big buzz off that and your performance in the gym improves slightly. And then you see these compounds advertised as increasing muscle mass, helping fat loss. They're SARMs.
Yeah.
So they're sold online from a supplement shop. So your immediate mental cognitive reaction to that is... they're legal, they're safe, because they've been sold by an online supplement shop.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So you purchase them, and straight away you've now put a step towards more illicit drugs.
Absolutely.
You know, And then you may find out later on down the line that SARMs aren't quite what you thought they were. Or pro-hormones was another one. A lot of people took pro-hormones not realizing what they actually were.
Yeah.
And so you sort of almost accidentally made that step into to stronger supplementation. And then steroids aren't that far a step away anymore.
No. Do you remember when the androstenedione and norandrostenedione came out?
Yeah, Norotein 2 and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I was like 17, 18 when that stuff was popular, and I used it. I mean, I saw mild gains. You know, I could see a difference, I guess, in after a few weeks, 4 weeks of using it.
Gaspari Nutrition used to sell Superdrol.
Yeah, that's right. Man, yeah. That's got to be one of the most wicked orals that was ever invented, too. Don't you think? Have you ever used Superdrol?
It's quite an effective compound, particularly if you stick it with a little bit of growth.
Yeah, I could because see that.
It really pulls the water into the muscle and makes you full as a house.
Huh. I never got much out of it because I ended up getting stomach issues. Like it killed my appetite, so I just never did much with it. I gave mine away to someone else.
So there's. Going back to this study, there is a potential lead through marketing towards more illicit drugs.
Sure.
You know, towards more powerful drugs and towards steroids. But there's also just the mental approach that, and this is not, everybody's not going to think this way at all, but the fact that you've started looking to supplementation as an investment in your physical development.
Yeah.
And when you start to look at ways in which to improve your physical development through supplementation,
yep.
Then you start to look into these things. You start to look into chemical advantages.
That's what I was thinking. And that's what I think we all do, man. And then you try this stuff. You're like, well, Mark McGwire took Andro. That's got to be the answer. Look at the home runs he's cracking. And then you take it and you're like, ah, shit, man. It really didn't get much out of this, you know?
I think the other thing as well is to a degree that when you enter the world of supplementation, you tend to enter the world of health and fitness where people supplement and openly talk about supplementation.
Okay.
And it's not long before the steroid question or the steroid topic comes up.
Sure, sure.
And you find it very normalized.
Yeah. Well, especially there where they're legal in the UK, you know, quasi.
But you find it in an environment, suddenly you're in an environment where there's quite open talk about steroids, and they're not regarded as some illicit drug. They're not regarded as anything other than just, you know, it's quite normal.
Yeah.
So it reduces the tabooness surrounding that drug use.
Yeah.
There was a study done by a Leeds doctor, as in professor doctor, not as in medical doctor.
Okay.
Leeds Uni, I can't remember her name, but she was commissioned to do a study looking at youth rugby.
Okay.
And supplement use within that. And that was quite revealing. That definitely showed that 15, 16-year-old boys who played rugby on almost like a scholarship level, the equivalent of what would be a scholarship level for America. You know, they played for their school, they played for their county teams, and they played for quite high-esteemed sports schools.
Yeah.
That they were very often introduced to supplementation through their peers or through their coaches.
Oh, sure.
And that a lot of them did start to consider stronger versions of that supplementation.
Of course, man. I mean, you want to get the most out of what you're doing, right?
Mm. So it's not as far a stretch as I think it first appears when you sort of look at it, you sort of think, oh, stupid sensationalism. But actually, when you start looking at it, there's probably more weight to that than people realize.
So if you're looking for a supplement, I mean, basically now you're saying, what can I take outside of food that's going to help me perform better, that's going to help me reach my goals faster? So you're already, I think just the act of going that direction, I wouldn't say it's like a slippery slope. I would just say that you've already begun thinking in that direction, you know? Mm-hmm. And I what's the real difference between considering that and then considering an actual anabolic steroid? Of course, the law, that's one thing. Potential.
But if you remove the legals,
yeah,
it gets a bit grayer, doesn't it? It gets a bit more muddy.
Sure, sure.
Because technically, especially if it's testosterone, you are to a degree taking a compound that does naturally form in your body.
Yeah.
It's... I think people will probably struggle a little bit with the concept that if you take protein powder, you're more likely to take steroids. And that's probably too broad a spectrum of a general sweeping statement to hold too much weight. But definitely when someone starts through the process of looking at how they can enhance their physique through supplementation,
yeah,
they start the pro thought process that could lead to those decisions later on about using anabolics.
That's very well said. That's exactly what I was thinking too. Hey, listen, we have about 10 minutes here before we're going to bring Dr. Scott on to talk to us about L-carnitine. I'm going to switch topics here to another news story. I've got a picture that I'm going to drop up here. U.S. Customs and Border Patrol seized this package. If you're drooling, well, you shouldn't be, because this stuff's illegal, guys. U.S. Customs and Border Protection said 456 vials of, this is interesting the way they word it, various human growth hormones or testosterone boosters were found in a package labeled as vehicle electronics. On May 29th, custom officers said the package was destined to an address in St. Clair County, Michigan, and was coming from Poland. The drugs
was
seized.
Scott McNally.
It says they had IPAM, somatropin, melanotin, tessamorelin. Do you know that one? Tessamorelin and Freg 176 to 199. Insulin-like growth factor 1, LR3, and mechano growth factor. So,
well, the peptide stuff wouldn't be a problem over there, would it?
No. What's that noise? Is your dog playing with something?
No, it's the birds outside the door zone.
You're kidding. Shoot that bird, no. Dave. Shoot that that's bird, Dave.
That's a mama bird with babies.
But we're trying to do the show. There.
I've let nature in.
Shut that damn bird up, Dave. Go get it. Go spread, no. Spray the hose on it, no. Or something.
No.
We're trying to do the show, Dave. We're trying to talk about drugs and stuff.
And that stuff. It's a bird. It's
birds and stuff. I couldn't tell. I was like, what is that? Yeah, no, we don't have much of an issue with, I mean, I think we're under the same kind of situation like you were talking about before. It's, I don't think they're quite illegal, but they aren't used for human consumption type thing.
So it would mainly be the somatropin, wouldn't it? Mainly be the growth hormone that they're concerned about.
Yeah, and that's considered to be a scheduled substance here.
Yeah, it is over here as well. It's under the 971 Drugs Act. It is a controlled substance.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do now that's been seized?
Seriously, whoever that was getting that, they must have been distributors. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that's a big deal. I don't know how they would charge in a situation like that, or if they will. I mean, they publicized this.
In the UK, they would charge under the drug. What would happen is the drugs would be sent, because generally law enforcement haven't got a clue what they're looking at, so it would be sent to a forensic chemist that would have a look at it and would report back of what substance, what they were. So test batches to say, yeah, this is that.
Yeah.
And then they would report back of which drugs were controlled and which ones weren't controlled.
Okay.
And then the police would then look to build their case around what elements of the drug seeds were controlled drugs and therefore criminal, and what elements of the drugs were non-controlled drug. And generally speaking, I don't know if it's the same in the States, but over here, if you have a seizure that's a mixture of drugs. So say you had a seizure that was steroids, growth hormone, peptides, and SARMs.
Yeah.
Generally, the police would only prosecute the growth hormone and the steroids. They wouldn't prosecute the SARMs and the peptides. Mm. Generally, they would just be wiped out. They just wouldn't be considered.
Okay.
They do have the option to bring in partner organizations like Trading Standards, and Trading Standards could then prosecute the SARMs and the peptides, because they are actually a breach in trading standards to sell them.
Yeah.
They're classed as a novel food and are illegal to sell. So, but it's not criminal. It's a trading standard issue. That's the problem. It's a sales law issue. So but very often they won't do the two organisations won't work in tandem on a prosecution, unless it's a particularly big one or they've particularly pissed them off.
Okay, yeah, and I imagine, I mean, if you have a mix of things that are like quasi kind of illegal, along with things that are real illegal, you prosecute for the real illegal stuff, and you probably get what you want out of it anyway. They're going to go to jail.
Yeah, it just depends on sometimes they'll get a bee in the bonnet with certain compounds. Or I mean, I know they're pretty hot over here when they do prosecute on Carteret.
I remember you mentioning that because one guy got busted real hard for that, right?
Yeah, they don't like that at all. And they're particularly hot on DMP.
Okay. The young girl died from that over there recently?
We've had several deaths over here because of it.
Has that made it kind of to the... It sounds almost like it's made it to the mainstream for fat loss in a way over there.
It's starting to bridge that gap.
Okay.
It's starting to bridge that gap, yes.
I mean, it works. There's that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's... They're seeing more of it occur in non sort of training related scenarios.
Right. Yeah. I remember like one of them was like a college girl who was just trying to lose fat.
That was a couple of years. That was, I think that was nearly 2 years ago, maybe longer now. The weird thing about that was she'd actually a couple of days prior to being hospitalized, she'd gone to the student union asking them if they'd put a DMP awareness day on.
Really?
Because of how dangerous it was and how she felt it ought to be brought forward to students that they understood the dangers of using DMP.
Huh.
And then 2 days later, she would have admitted to hospital suffering from, and I mean, it was something like 1,200 milligrams or something she'd taken. It was a huge chunk.
Wow. Huh.
And she subsequently died, I think, a couple of days later.
What a nutter. That's a word, yeah. Right? That's a word.
It is a word, yes.
I thought so. I knew that. I knew that word.
He's so proud of himself. I will teach you English, Scott. You're getting there slowly, and you can lose this American ease that you speak.
All right. Well, listen, guys, we're going to take a really quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have Dr. Scott with us. We are going to discuss injectable L-carnitine. We'll be back in just a minute. TrueNutrition.com and GetAzoth.com. So I'm sitting here, I'm editing this show, and I realized to myself, I haven't used intra-workout in a while. I figured, well, you know what? I'm training from home during the quarantine, and I'm probably not pushing hard enough to really need it. I'm back in the gym, and I decided it's time. I pulled the trigger. Literally today, I just ordered a tub of True Nutrition's PERI-MD. That's the mountain dog formula. John created this stuff. It's based off highly branched cyclic dextrin and EAAs. He put the combo together. It tastes delicious. It's a cherry limeade. It mixes nice and thin, so it's not going to like overpower your gut while you're trying to lift. I also picked up their fish oil and their whole food multivitamin because they've got great sports supplements and they also have great health supplements. Now, here's the deal. If you buy their stuff and you use our code ADVICES, then you directly support what we are doing here at Advices Radio and Think Big. So guys, I always appreciate everything you guys do, sharing our stuff, telling your friends about our shows and all of that. And if you want to take that a step further, then you can buy, you know, your health supplements, some sports performance supplements, and all that stuff definitely goes to help us, you know, support our programming when you use our code ADVICES. Second, I want to shout out our new great sponsor, GetAzoth.com. I've got links in the show notes to that and to the Amazon. Either place, you can use our code ADVICES10. They have three great products now. All of them are to get your brain moving, thinking faster, thinking sharper, more cognitive ability. As Azoth says, get shit done. And I'll tell you what, guys, I am definitely a fan of their products. I've been using Azoth now for a couple of years, and it's helping me to become the most productive I can. Guys, let's make 2020 well, I was going to say, let's make it the best year, but let's just try to, make the best of it. Improve your memory, your focus, get more of an edge with the nootropics at getazoth.com. All right, guys, thanks for listening to me. Let's get back to the program. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Guys, I didn't mention at the beginning, but if you enjoy our stuff, do me a favor, hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, comment, all that stuff helps to boost us in the algorithm. We are back, and now we have with us Dr. Scott Stevenson, and we're going to discuss some injectable L-carnitine. So, Scott, Dave has been looking at some research about injectable L-carnitine that it was beneficial for, what was it, Dave, remodeling heart tissue after heart injury?
Yeah, mainly heart failure. So it was improving myocardium density and heart, overall heart shape, valve shape and size as well. And also in regards to reversing of age-related brain function decline.
Nice.
And that was at like now super high doses, right?
Yeah, the heart stuff was, I think if I remember rightly, it was 9 grams a day IV.
Wow!
For a couple of weeks, and then it was a year long study. I think it was 2 grams a day.
Wow! Okay.
And then the brain stuff was I think a gram a day.
Right. So they're proposing this has to do with its role in the L-carnitine acyltransferase enzyme that helps bring fatty acids into the mitochondria, improving mitochondrial function.
Yeah, I believe so. How exactly it helps with heart remodeling, I haven't quite grasped yet. I need to have another delve into that one. But the results seem quite impressive. To be fair, it was.
I'd have to go look.
Took a lot of patients. It was.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, as I said, it ended up with pretty much every patient in the study being free of heart meds by the end of the study.
Wow.
And what was the control group like? Did they have a another like intend to treat group that they didn't give the carnitine to initially?
I don't think so in that. No, I think it was just a straight follow of treatment. So obviously, like you say, it's open to criticism, but and say the other one was looking at addressing brain deterioration through age, which seemed quite interesting as well. I need to get it back into them and have a proper delve.
I haven't read those. There's really some interesting things because you'll find creatine and L-carnitine, they have a lot of similar effects, or they've got some interesting they're both found in meat. L-carnitine, creatine, there's something in cells, the heart, as well as skeletal muscle, all muscle cells. And I don't know about other tissues, but definitely skeletal muscle for sure, and heart, called the creatine phosphokinase shuttle. And basically, one of creatine's roles, aside from just having creatine phosphate, which is an immediate store of energy, can be used to create ATP, the energy currency, is that creatine phosphate is smaller than ATP, and it can diffuse more rapidly. So the idea is, you sort of see, I'm going to depict this, my little figures here with my hands. So if mitochondria are making ATP, there are mitochondrial versions of the creatine phosphokinase enzyme that will make that take that ATP, produce in the mitochondria, make creatine phosphate out of it, and then that can diffuse really rapidly to wherever it might be needed. And you'll find isoforms of the creatine phosphokinase there that will convert that creatine phosphate into ATP. That's what we know creatine loading does, for instance. But that idea of being able to shuttle the ATP in the form of creatine phosphate is something that's really important for cellular energetics, and especially highly oxidative cells, which the heart is the badass. It's the biggest badass of the aerobic cells in the world. It's going constantly. It's absolutely amazing. And L-carnitine also has its effects. And you can load this. At first, the initial studies suggested nothing really in terms of skeletal muscle and fat loss and that kind of thing. But Paul Greenhalgh, who's there in the UK, has done the work with creatine or L-carnitine supplementation. And you can load the muscle cell with L-carnitine. And this is what I want to look into the heart stuff because I don't know as much about that. But what that does, you can increase the muscle cell's ability to bring fatty acids from outside the mitochondria and then in, and that step is the rate-limiting one. So L-carnitine can help with the oxidation of fat and actually shift towards fat use more so. And that's really kind of a big deal, because one of the limitations in using fuel is the rate at which you can get that down into the mitochondria to be oxidized or to produce ATP. And fats can't be oxidized to produce energy nearly as rapidly as carbohydrate.
Yeah.
And the limiting step, at least at one level, is that transferase enzyme that brings the fatty acids from outside to inside. So L-carnitine helps speed up fat oxidation, which could, for instance, help spare glycogen. You can use more fat, you're using less carbohydrate, spare glycogen. And creatine has, obviously, the creatine phosphate, so it's working with the creatine phosphate level of energy use. So that's really rapid in terms of like sprinting and that sort of thing. We think of creatine phosphate. It's your most rapidly available form of energy for ATP, for muscle contraction. So L-carnitines with fat oxidation, you can speed that up with L-carnitine. Creatine has its impact on creatine phosphate, and then, of course, that shuttling aspect as well. So, and they found that there are effects on neurons as well with creatine. Mark Hargraves has done some work on that. Yes.
I just wanted to raise my hand. I got a question, though. So now this is something I know very little about, and I remember you and John talked about benefits of L-carnitine at your seminar at the Arnold a couple years, 3 years back. I remember you guys went into it, pretty in depth. Now, can you explain to us the role of insulin in fat loss with it? Like, what's the benefit of either spiking insulin or using insulin to increase its ability to help with fat loss?
That's the other parallel with L-carnitine and creatine. So insulin regulates creatine uptake, and insulin also regulates L-carnitine uptake. So this is what Paul Greenhalgh, the researcher, Paul Greenhalgh also did like the very first big study that was sort of launched the whole research train into creatine's ergogenic effects. Paul Greenhalgh was the guy who did that. Isokinetic knee extensions, like 30 reps or something like that, like for 5 sets, blah, blah, blah. He was the guy who did that. And now he's done it. It's been his lab, actually. I remember the first name. I want to say it's not Phillips. I remember the first name on the paper, but it's Paul Greenhalgh's lab. And they've shown now, actually, with oral supplementation with L-carnitine, they would give carbohydrate to spike insulin.
Okay.
Like people would take grape juice, you know, which is a high glycemic index to get a high insulin release to help with creatine uptake. And they found that you can load creatine L-carnitine, as long as you do it over, I think they had like a 12-week study. It took some time. But they've, in order to sort of get a better picture of what goes on there, and this is where the idea of injectable L-carnitine comes from, they knew that insulin was involved with the uptake, and they've got a basic pharmacokinetic study, essentially, where they would infuse L-carnitine and use a hyperinsulinemic clamp, so elevate insulin levels and see the L-carnitine gets taken up more readily when insulin levels are elevated.
Okay.
So that's why people would inject L-carnitine and also inject insulin with it to promote the L-carnitine uptake.
Okay.
And once you've got more L-carnitine loaded in the muscle, and presumably you've got more of that L-carnitine acyl transferase enzyme, you've now got a better ability to oxidize fats. Mm. And that's in a sort of a way, it's going to, in fact, they've shown this during exercise, it shifts your fuel use towards fats. Something that growth hormone, for instance, does. It helps with fat use. So growth hormone is not a giant thermogenic.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the massive effect there. But if you're using, 3,000 calories, and instead of 1,000 calories from fats and 2,000 from carbs, and now you're gone to 1,500 or 2,000 from fats, just tossing out random numbers.
Yeah.
You're oxidizing more fat from your fuel.
Huh.
So you can actually use more fat. That's one of the reasons why growth hormone helps with fat loss. So L-carnitine is what people will use during contest prep if you save it for that. Or maybe you could even use this to stay leaner in the off season. But you know, probably not, probably better to kind of leave it to the prep time, in my thought. Just use, save that trump card till later on when you really need to focus on the fat loss.
Okay.
And they would inject the L-carnitine, and actually, then there's also this, muscle contractions promotes creatine uptake and also promotes L-carnitine uptake. So insulin, muscle contractions, both increase creatine uptake and L-carnitine uptake. So people would, you inject, take your creatine with your intra-workout, right, and insulin or carbs, and L-carnitine people would inject, and while you're injecting stuff, they would inject a small amount of insulin to try to help with the L-carnitine uptake that would happen then alongside the muscle contractions. So you're just loading your system with L-carnitine, and you're improving the muscle cell's ability to use fat as a fuel.
Okay.
And it pans out that it works. Huh. There's no studies that I know of where they've, you know, taken people. So here are your L-carnitine prejects, you know.
Yeah.
And we're gonna inject one of these every day before you go to your exercise, something like that.
Yeah.
The Readyject, you know, L-carnitine, but and plus it's a pretty big injection too at the concentrations people typically buy this in.
Yeah.
And so, I was going to ask, what sort of dosing would be typical then?
Something like 600 to 800 milligrams.
That's what I thought, man. That's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot. That's what turned me away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. So usually that's like, I think it's usually 200 milligrams per mil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Generally comes in 1,000 milligram per 5 mil vial. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Or yeah, I've seen bigger vials that you can get. In fact, it's funny. Like people, you can, they've known this in horses for forever. Like you go look on some of the horse medications sites.
Yeah.
We may have talked about this on the Muscle Minds, but yeah, they like people use, AMP as to help with fat loss. And there's also, if you want to like get an insight as to what bodybuilders have like tested out or might test out, go and look at the equine physiology type, what they use in horse racing. Cause they've like the bodybuilding, like who gives a fuck? Let's just blast everything and see what we can make the body do. Like that's what they do with the horses. Like, cause they just, it's worth it. If, you know, they kill a horse, but he makes $5 million in, you know, in monies at the racetrack, they don't care.
Yeah.
So it's really sad, but they use L-carnitine. You can find L-carnitine equine injections down in fact, a lot of those come from Australia. I think the regulations might be different there. And funny enough, there's a place in Australia where you can get
L-carnitine. I used to get AMP5, and I used to get PGF2A from Australian vets.
Yeah.
Because they didn't give a shit.
Just send it. Yeah, exactly. Right. So
as long as it was going out of the country, they didn't care.
Yeah, like going in, like you can't get anything in, but it's bizarre, right? So that's the idea. Insulin in of itself inhibits lipolysis.
Yeah, yeah.
Insulin, yeah. So, you know, people, I've always sort of wondered to what extent this is a placebo or what have you. A lot of people will they want to produce some hypoglycemia by injecting very small amounts of insulin before you work out. And well, the thing is there, yes, typically lowered blood glucose will then favor a sympathetic response, and glucagon levels will go up. Epinephrine levels will go up. You'll start to turn on lipolysis if you get hypoglycemic. And anyone who's actually gone hypo from insulin use knows that feels awful, but that's just a normal response of the body to having lower levels of glucose. But if you've done that because you've got insulin in the system that's driving the glucose down, you're also inhibiting the lipolysis, the freeing up of the fat that you're trying to get in the first place. You're using an anti-lipolytic hormone, the insulin, to produce the hypoglycemia that you're hoping will then produce lipolysis.
Yeah.
But you've shot yourself in the foot by using insulin to do that. At least I think so. I think that's Yeah, that's sort of a silly approach that some people do. I think just people like to mess around with stuff. You know, it's like, this is, you know, I'm doing this and I'm pressing all these special buttons, so it's going to make things work better. So I think that's a lot of it, to be honest, in that case. But I've never seen anyone, that's not something you can study either, because you're going to risk people's lives. Like, we're going to make you go hypoglycemic and see what happens to your fuel use. But that can happen there are studies. I remember hearing some of my professors talk about this stuff back at when they were first doing some of the carbohydrate feedings, looking at performance. And one of the things they would initially did, not knowing, you know, not really thinking this all the way through, is they would just like give a big bolus load of carbohydrate and then have these guys do like a lactate threshold on, running test on a treadmill or maybe just below that. So they take in like 100 grams of carbs and they'd start running at basically the pace that they could only maintain for like 45 or 15 minutes. And the glucose levels would go up and then they'd keep on running and that would drive glucose levels down. And then by the end of the bout, they'd be hypoglycemic. Yeah. They'd be all fucked up. And literally that's people were like passing out and that sort of thing because they weren't metering in the glucose. So that's insulin does that. And it can happen in under normal physiological conditions.
Hmm.
Anyway, that's kind of off topic, but that's the idea with creatine carnitine parallels are kind of interesting. And that's why people inject insulin with L-carnitine to get to sort of enhance that. There's probably some plateau and some people, I haven't ever seen this. So some people say, you know, you have to inject it. And that's the only way to elevate L-carnitine levels. But the oral supplementation will do. It just takes a while.
Yeah, yeah. I thought John had said at the seminar that it's like it takes months or weeks, you know, long time before it actually has a benefit versus the injectable is pretty much instant.
There's one thing, like for instance, with creatine, I mean, I know the creatine literature, and this has been studied more so, but creatine has a spontaneous degradation to creatinine, which amounts to... it's like a gram or two per day. And if you're eating meat and your body's making up for that, then it will, once you've loaded up above a normal resting level, let's say, your sort of constitutive or your baseline set point for creatine levels, it'll take about 30 days for that to come back down. But you can maintain it just by, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 grams a day.
Hmm.
So, and my guess would be that if you, for instance, have ramped up L-carnitine, and there's some turnover, cellular turnover there with injectable L-carnitine if someone chooses to go that route, you can probably maintain that with oral to some degree. It may come down eventually, but probably not as rapidly as if you just stopped it.
Huh.
So that's the thing, like those injections are big and it's a lot of needles and it's kind of a pain in the butt, you know, especially if people don't like injections.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can probably do that to kind of supplement and sort of, you know, keep the stores topped off, at least to some degree. And I would, you know, still do it, throw that in with your intra-workout, you know, with carbs in it, you know, or a post-workout. So you've got the effect of contraction and insulin coupled with the L-carnitine coming in.
Okay.
So there's a carcinogenic compound that's formed from L-carnitine consumption. And it's one of the connections between meat eating and colon cancer, supposedly. Yeah. So that's one of the issues with L-carnitine supplementation.
I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah, so that's
I didn't either.
Yeah, so that's one of the things you can look at. I can't remember what it's called right now. I'm blanking on it, but
Dave's heart is great, and then he has colon cancer.
Oh, you're using it for your heart? Okay.
No, I decided to stop being a fat bastard, so I'm just gonna be fat from now on.
right. So therapy.
I decided to use to give it a shot to see how it was. And it was only when I started, I was having a look to see what there was in regards to the fat burning properties. And I came across an article that was a sort of cover piece that linked to other studies. And it was actually, there was more evidence towards the benefit in heart and benefit in brain than there was actually towards the benefit in fat loss.
Huh.
Yeah.
The very little study evidence regarding fat loss. There was quite a bit with the other two.
I'll be damned.
And I just found it, I was just curious about it. And I thought I'd give it a play. So I started with IV.
Whew.
Get going right off the bat, man.
Well,
you don't mess around, man.
My wife's a phlebotomist, so it makes life easier.
Right.
But it was not the easiest thing to maintain because you're doing two injections a day. So I just moved back onto IM. I noticed,
you just gotta get a port put in, Dave. Just get a port put in like your subclavian. You're good to go.
I kept saying to her, just stick a cannula in. I'll just bang it through the cannula. You know what I mean? It'll be a piece of piss, but she wouldn't do it. She just wouldn't put me one in. I did notice when I started it, I did notice a change in energy levels. Definitely.
Oh, really? Really?
Yes.
One level? Yeah. And I felt definitely both cognitive and physical. Definitely felt less flat, less on my arse, much more alert.
Oh, nice.
Definite change. I mean, as Scott knows, I'd gone quite strict for the first part of this diet. More, I respond well to extremes mentally rather than I do to just sort of like behaving. So I'd gone quite extreme with it, and also just to sort of break that habit of just grabbing food when I felt like it and when I had time, and grabbing what was in the fridge instead of actually having a structured diet. So I've gone back to a more regular structured diet now rather than the 2 meals, 1,000 calories a day I was. See, his dogs. You don't shout about his dogs, but you shout about my bird.
Dave has making all sorts of racket before you came on, Scott. I mean, he was being so obnoxious. He had these birds. He has these birds, and he was making them chirp, and it was so annoying.
These are birds outside, Scott, in nature, you know, the real world. He's just such a city boy, he doesn't appreciate these things. So I started off at 1,000 calories a day, split into 2 meals.
I know, man, it's so intense.
Very low-calorie diet, Dave, like right off the bat, just like 200 grams of protein with whatever, you know, trace carbs from veggies, right? Something like that?
No, it was more probably 50 fats, 150 grams protein.
So 50 grams of fat?
Yeah, roughly 50 and 70 grams of fat, and then the rest was protein.
Okay, all right.
So it wasn't a huge amount, but I did that for 6 weeks, dropped 32 pounds.
No carb ups, though?
It's one every 3 weeks.
And have you been training through this?
Not. There's no gyms open, so it's just been a bit of bag work, effectively. And now I've dropped into a bit more of a regular, you know, so low-fat carbs and proteins, 3 meals a day, and then I'll step up from there. I was hoping the gyms were going to be opening in a couple of weeks. I was starting preparing to be able to go back and at least have productive workouts, but it doesn't look like that's happening now. So,
so did you start that's a ketogenic diet, so kind of a very low ketogenic diet. Yes, did you get into ketosis and then add in the L-carnitine, or was it all kind of all at once?
Okay. No, I'd already been running about 3-4 weeks before and that was mainly just because of a delivery problem with my supplier that I use anyway.
Right. So do you feel when you're ketosis you have that sort of mental clarity that people really
I go the opposite. I get very foggy.
No shit. Okay.
I'm used to it. I'm used to it though, Scott.
Yeah.
I don't feel clear at all. I feel all right in ketosis, in that everyday function is okay energy-wise, but as soon as I start to try and output any energy, I crash really, really quickly. So it's like if I'd gone out and done, I mean, I live very rural, so I'd go out in the morning, do say an hour's walk up and down some hills. Mm-hmm. I'd come back in, I'd be wiped for 4, 5, 6 hours after that.
Wow.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't come back. But as soon as I started the L-carnitine, I found I just had more energy.
Huh.
Yeah.
Very, very rapidly. Yeah, very rapidly off it. I guess that's the only real big change I've noticed is I feel brighter. And I've got a better energy flow from it.
Hmm. Have you been testing your resting insulin levels? Has that come down?
No, I haven't actually. I should do really, I know, but I've been a bit slack. It was just more just a case of break this habit I'd got into of just sort of grabbing what I could when I could and get into a more structure. So I started with severe restriction, and once I got my head around that and I was happy with that mentally.
Right.
Because my problem with dieting is not physical, it's mental. I quite literally aren't motivated enough for it. Now I've broke that sort of back of it. I'm finding it very easy to get back into prep and prepare meals and do things a bit more regularly.
Your goal back in the day was 400 pounds, right? That was the goal. Yeah. Why don't you make your next goal 4%?
Oh, that's quite a goal.
Let's not be silly now.
I mean, like, extremes, and he's just basically saying,
can't we make the goal 40%? I can achieve that.
That's good. Yeah, look at that. Like, I mean, I would love. I'll send you a link. There's a buddy of mine who is a power lifter who like he set world bench press records in his weight class, and he was just like the same approach as you had. Like, and he was like, it looked like he was going to explode most of the time, and his blood pressure was sky high. But he just knew, you know, just being that big and just maximizing all the quote unquote interstitial leverage, he was just a beast. And now he's since retired. He doesn't, I mean, he still lifts like an animal, but he's not trying to break any powerlifting records. And now he's absolutely shredded. It looks phenomenal. It looks crazy. Yeah.
One step at a time. I'm just downgrading from sumo to normal. Once we've got past sumo wrestler back down to normal, then I'll consider the next move.
Yeah. I'm just trying to, like, you kind of said, like, you go with extreme. So, you know, they've got to dangle the right carrot for you to keep you going. So.
All right, guys.
I started at 355, 360, and I'm coming down to about 280 to start with.
Okay.
That's a good place.
So that's the first drop. And then we'll see where we are then.
Yeah. You'll look quite different. You'll still be gigantic at 280, of course.
Right.
Maybe small for you, that's kind of so crazy.
All right, guys. Well, amazing. Scott, we much appreciate you coming on and helping to educate us on injectable L-carnitine, really L-carnitine in general. I think this about wraps us up for this episode. Guys, if you have any questions, if you want to take part in our show, then definitely you can comment, you know, on the YouTube page. You can join our group over at Advices Radio on Facebook. We'd love to have your questions. We'd love to have you be a part of the next episode. Of course, you can go to crosslands.org.uk to reach out to Dave. And while we got Scott here, you can go to byobbcoach.com to check out his book, Be Your Own Bodybuilder Coach. And I'll put the Amazon affiliate link in the description for that. Of course, guys, check out our sponsors, truenutrition.com, getazoff.com. And like I said before, if you haven't subscribed yet, do us a favor, hit the button, hit the notification bell, because we have several programs coming out each week. Dr. Scott and Dave. Gentlemen, it's a pleasure as always. I appreciate you guys both.
Absolutely, man. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott, for making us look dumb as usual.